I'm Howard Bryant, in for Bill Littlefield. It's time for three stories you should know.
To all the moms out there, you know, I was playing free today, and I tried, but, you know, Angelique played really well. She played out of her mind.
That, of course, is Serena Williams speaking after the Wimbledon finals. And that's where we're going to start this week. I'm joined by Lindsay Gibbs, sports writer for Think Progress. Welcome, Lindsay.
Thanks for having me.
And The Wall Street Journal's Rachel Bachman. Hi, Rachel.
Hello, Howard.
Lindsay, let's talk Serena.
Yeah, so 10 months after she nearly died giving birth to her daughter, Olympia, Serena made it all the way to the Wimbledon final last weekend, where she lost in straight sets to now three-time major champion Angelique Kerber. As you heard in the clip, Williams dedicated her run at Wimbledon to all the moms out there. She's been incredibly frank and open about pregnancy and motherhood, and it's really put maternity rights, both in tennis and in other sports, in sharp perspective. If you'll remember, she was unseated for the French Open. That caused a lot of controversy. And now other tournaments are taking pregnancy and maternity leave into account when doing their seeding, which is a good step. However, throughout the sports world, and even in tennis, there's a really long way to go. In the WNBA, a player can get 50% of their contract when they leave for maternity leave, but that's only if they're under contract. There's no child care in any of these sports leagues. The LPGA actually just recently added child care. So there's so much work still to be done. Do you think that we'll get to a place where motherhood in sports is fully supported, and can Serena move the needle with all the advocacy work she's doing?
Serena is important for a number of reasons in this issue, mainly because women's tennis has been around so long. These younger leagues, the WNBA, the NWSL, I think a lot of these women are reluctant to ask for more benefits because they're worried about their league's viability. And so Serena really can help others by just modeling this behavior. Hey, things should change. Things should be better.
Yeah. And one of the things about this, too, is that we always say that the smartest person in the room is the one with the biggest number of zeros on their paycheck. Serena is the one. She's the one. And women's tennis is where the female athletes are making the most money as well. When you have someone like Serena who can be out front on this issue, hopefully what it does is it allows the other athletes to feel like they can speak more freely. But once again, when you're talking about team sports, the gap between what Serena earns and Serena's power is so different from, say, a WNBA player.
I hope what it does is empower women to go to their unions and ask, okay, can we make this a top issue in our next bargaining sessions? Because that's really what it's going to take. They need to band together and bargain this.
Well, one of the areas that's really big is the fact that with individual athletes, especially on the women's side, when you do something unpopular, they can come after your money, they can come after your endorsements, they can do all that. But with a team sport, if those unions do get stronger, then you can actually see a little bit more power on the women's side. And that's exactly what we need. You know, speaking of tennis, the other story, in addition to Serena at Wimbledon, was the epic. And epic is not always a compliment. Men's semifinal between John Isner and Kevin Anderson won, and this is tennis, not volleyball, 26-24. By Anderson. The match renewed calls for a fifth set tiebreak and deciding sets in all Grand Slam tournaments, a format that's only used in the U.S. Open. This, to me, is a John Isner problem. I like to think of myself as a reasonable person. But remember when Isner in 2010 battled 70-68 over Nicolas Mahut, which is a ridiculous score for a tennis match. Here's a suggestion, folks. Break serve. Just break serve. That's all we're asking. Since 2011, there have been 542 five-set matches at Wimbledon, the French Open and Australian Opens combined, and only 6.6% of them have gone past the 11-9 score in the fifth. So, Lindsay, Rachel Bachman, help me here. You're my only hope. Am I wrong here? Are we really willing to change the sport and change the rules of an entire sport? Really, just for one guy?
You know, I think we should, because it's not so much.
So you're going against me on this?
I'm going
wrong?
Against you. I'm
Come
sorry.
On, man.
Because it's not so much about Isner. It's about saving the rest of tennis from Isner.
From Isner.
I mean, their match went so long.
6 hours and 37 minutes.
Yeah. That what it did is it messed up the schedule for the entire weekend. So the women's final the next day didn't have a start time, which is just so disrespectful to the women.
Completely.
And the women's double final didn't even get to be played on center court. So honestly, I know what you're saying, but I am for this because we kind of had to save tennis from John Isner right now.
Howard, I'm siding with you on this one. And here's why. There's a few sports that have these just like oddball rules or lack thereof. And I love the quirks of tennis. I think we should embrace them. I love that Wimbledon, for instance, has a curfew, 11 p.m. curfew. I just picture the queen like coming out onto her porch in Buckingham Palace and saying, that's quite enough. And, you know, and then just picking it up the next day. Like, I like those quirks, and I think we should embrace them.
Well, I think John Isner is the problem. But I also think, too, that Wimbledon may have to be the one. I don't think that the French or the Australian Open really need this. But Wimbledon might, because playing on grass, you can essentially serve all night and the returner doesn't have a chance. However, Lindsay, you're 100% right that this was a completely disrespectful thing to the women. That was Saturday is supposed to be the women's day. It's women's championship day. I think they messed this up. I still don't think they need a tiebreak because I think they could have handled it differently. Yeah. But I really just do not want to see them change the entire sport just because John Isner can't return a tennis ball. I'm sorry on that. I can't help it. All right. Rachel Bachman, take us away. I am. I'm fired up about this. Rachel Bachman, take us away from tennis, please.
Well, it's curtains for the Final Four. That's $5 million curtains. U.S. Bank Stadium, which will host the 2019 Men's Final Four, is shelling out more than $5 million to cover about 460,000 square feet of windows and clear material in the stadium. This is because the NCAA wants this stadium to essentially feel more like an arena, indoors, darker, a little more intimate. But this phenomenon is really highlighting a broader trend in sports, which is these more open-air, light stadiums that are still enclosed, but, you know, have a lot of sunlight coming in. Houston, which also got a bid to a future Final Four energy stadium, has a giant translucent roof that they have to cover with about $800,000 worth of curtains. So what do you guys think of this trend toward the world's biggest curtains?
Well, Lindsay, you're going to be much kinder than I am, so please, please take it away. Go ahead.
I don't know that I am. For this. I just hear these numbers, and I'm sorry, the only thing I can think is pay the players.
Pay the players, right?
How are we doing this? How are we spending $5 million on curtains to play the
games? There's no money for the players,
Lindsay. And yet we're all claiming that, you know, there's just no way to pay the actual labor.
Here's what I think about this. I think, number one, I think the curtain part is actually funny. That part made me laugh, and the numbers on it kind of make me cry on it. But at the same time, as someone who watches basketball, who on earth would want a seat that's 3 miles from the court? This is such a huge money grab. Rachel, when you're at the Final Four, what do they do up in the cheap seats? Do they simply have big television monitors up there, or do you just get to tell everybody that you're at a game you can't see?
Well, since I get to sit in the cushy media seats,
I don't really have to.
But I will tell you, you know, the NCAA requires that stadiums that host the Men's Final Four have at least 60,000 seats. And this is basically like cramming three arenas into one space, right? But those things are full every year. And so as long as people are willing to pay the money and willing to get the nosebleeds, you know, I think the NCAA, which, by the way, makes about 85% to 90% of its annual income on the basketball tournament, you know, can justify this setup because people are still coming.
Well, I think for my second act, I'm going to be a tailor.
One of the firms working on the Minneapolis Stadium is hiring Howard, so take note.
All right, that is curtains on this edition of Three Stories You Should Know. My guests have been Lindsay Gibbs, sports writer for Think Progress. Thank you, Lindsay.
Thank you.
And Rachel Bachman of The Wall Street Journal. Thank you.
Thank you, Howard.